Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 11th of May. You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme, with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. On today's show, we're going to be looking at, so it's been a week of elections, both in Spain and also over in the UK. We'll be looking at the fallout from that. We'll be looking at what it means for politics in Spain, in particular, what it means for the Partido Popular. Is it the end for Ciudadanos? Is it the end for Podemos as well? Where they go from there? And the scenes of people celebrating Libertad on Saturday nights in major cities across Spain. Are we in the stage of Libertad at the moment? Also, going over to the UK, the elections, the blue wall, Boris Johnson's Conservative Party seem to have taken strengthened their grip on the Labour heartlands. Meanwhile, north of the border in Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister, says that the victory of the SNP in coalition with the Greens means that a second referendum on the future of Scotland now seems to be on the cards. We're looking to hear your views and viewpoints on that. If you want to get in touch with the show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And it's somewhat of a momentous occasion because we are following social distancing protocols. But for the first time in a very long time indeed, I'm delighted to welcome two guests at opposite ends of the studio, at opposite ends of the spectrum, even, you could say. From my left, and I use that word advisably, I'm delighted to be joined and welcome back to the studio, Alf Brewer. Alf, how are you, my friend?
I am marvellous, and 15 months has been, it seems like years.
You get less, like the saying goes, you get less for armed robbery, don't you? Let's face it.
Yeah, but 15 months ago, I remember I was the last one in the studio before we went into lockdown. But it just seems like a lifetime ago. So much has gone on in between. Unbelievable.
And, do you like what we've done with the place since you've been away?
Yeah, it's nearly the same.
and on my right, and again, I use that word advisedly, Andres Gallardo. Andres, good morning to you, even.
Good morning.
I'm so excited to have you.
Whole day in one.
Listen, I'm delighted to be sharing the studio with Alfie. This is a great occasions.
If you want to get involved with the show, then
I think that was tongue in cheek.
I think it may have been tongue in cheek. We've got to have everybody in the studio with, but we are observing social distancing. But of course, the numbers as follows.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Right then, let's have a look at what's making the front pages in the UK and Spain. The Times, like most of the papers, leads with Boris Johnson's confirmation of a major easing of coronavirus restrictions next Monday. It says hugs will be allowed for the first time in more than a year. Pubs and restaurants can serve inside. Cinemas and theatres can reopen, and five people will be able to visit care home residents. However, it adds, the Prime Minister has urged people not to throw caution to the wind. Boris Johnson appealed to British common sense as he confirmed the next step in lifting COVID rules, that they would go ahead as planned next week. That's what the Daily Express says. Daily Star says experts have claimed creepy crawlies should be used to pad out school dinners and be hidden in snacks to avoid a world food crisis. The 1 minute, you can always trust the Daily Star to give you an interesting one. The 1 meter social distancing rule could be scrapped after the Prime Minister gave an upbeat announcement on the latest relaxing of COVID rules. That's what the Daily Mail reports. It also notes, however, that the Prime Minister resisted calls to scrap all lockdown rules sooner than the 21st of June date specified in the government's roadmap. A story about social care leads the Daily Mirror with a story about a woman nursing her dying husband who fears she won't be able to afford his funeral. The paper picks up on a pledge by Boris Johnson to fix social care and tells him, "We're still waiting, Prime Minister." The Sun says next Monday's easing of restrictions means indoor drinking and dining and overnight romps are allowed. The Eye says it's 6 days until people can hug their family members again. It also highlights other things that we've permitted, such as COVID rules ease, such as indoor pints and the opening of cinemas and museums. Labour Deputy Party Leader Angela Rayner has spoken exclusively to The Guardian after the party was criticised for its showing in the local elections, sparking a French bench reshuffle. Ms Rayner says the party has patronised its heartland voters for too long. We'll be looking at that in a bit. The Prime Minister has appealed to the public to use common sense when restrictions ease on May the 17th. That's what the Daily Telegraph reports. It says updated government advice states that people should make a personal choice on whether to keep their distance from others. Metro also covers the latest easing of restrictions and the reduced COVID alert level, saying big changes are on the way next week when indoor mixing is allowed. Meanwhile, for the FT, iron ore hit a record high yesterday, climbing 8.5%, fueled by strong demand from China. The FT said commodity markets have gone into overdrive recently as large economies start to emerge from the pandemic. And looking at the front page of the webpage of our media partner, El País, looking at outdoor parties erupt across Spain as state of alarm ends. Coronavirus. Spain is 100 days away from group immunity, says PM. Pedro Sanchez expects that 70% of adults will be vaccinated against COVID-19 by August the 18th. And why Madrid's leftist strongholds voted for the conservative popular party. Freedom and fear of Pablo Iglesias. Hold on to your horses, Andres. El País travels to the so-called red belt of the region to find out why so many voters cast their ballot for victorious candidate Isabel Díaz Ayuso rather than the socialist parties. Back to those front pages as well in the UK. Back to the front pages in the UK just to see what they are saying. Starting off from the top of my pile, which is the Times. Rocket fuel. Queen's speech will pledge to top up education. Also, cautious kid kiss goodbye to COVID curbs on freedom. The Express, free at last, but let's use British common sense. That's the headline. The Daily Star, cunning new plan to save the world. Bugs in school dinners. Don't think much of the grub. Very good indeed. The Daily Mail, PM, the end is now in sight. The Daily Mirror, we're still waiting, Prime Minister, as I said before. The Eye, 6 days until you can hug your family. The Guardian, Rayner, Labour has talked down to voters for too long. The Daily Telegraph, it's up to all of us to exercise common sense. The Metro, three easy does it. Prime Minister confirms huge easing of lockdown. FT leads, as I said before, with record iron ore price signals raw material boomers economy surge. And finally, The Sun, with the Prime Minister saying indoor drinking and dining and overnight romps are allowed. Yes, is the front. I said that with feeling. Thank you, Alf. And a graphic which I won't describe, but anyway. And that is the front. Those are the front pages of your newspapers today, Tuesday, the 11th of May.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And the WhatsApps are already buzzing. Good morning to Richard. Good to be back. I just realised we haven't actually had a viewpoint for 2 weeks, so you're probably all in denial. 3 weeks, was it? Thank you, Alf. Was it 3 weeks?
And this is the third week.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Richard has come in. Well, good morning. Are allowed, also known as made legal. People have been doing all of that for a long time, given there's almost zero enforcement. The markets on the retreat this morning, a sea of red, inflation fears in the US. If you want to drop me a line on the Facebook page, just getting that up and firing as well with your thoughts. 952-78-4000. Let's kick off, though. Let's go start with the results and the scenes in Spain's capital, Madrid. It was a hard-fought, it was an acrimonious, I think we can agree, election for Madrid. We had bullets being delivered. We had Pablo Iglesias storming away from a televised debate at the couple of days before the election itself. Andres, what was your take on what happened and the results and what it means with the Partido Popular and Ayuso?
To start with, the campaign was absolutely crazy. I mean, the phrases that came out of the politicians and the exaggeration, almost talking civil war style, was absolutely terrible. The end result, of course, was that the polls predicted the PP would win the election, it was hailed as the elections of all elections, and I don't know why, because it was only a regional government election. It was called as a snap election to start with. It's only going to last 2 years, because in 2 years' time they have to go out and vote again, according to that particular parliament regulation. The end result was that the PP won, as predicted by the polls, but by far a bigger margin than was predicted. Taking the vote mainly from the party Ciudadanos, which is a centre-right party that is on the way of to extinction. That's where most of the vote came through. The Socialist Party failed miserably, I have to say, because now they've become the third political force in the regional parliament there, making Más Madrid, which is... it was part of Podemos at one point, but more moderate, so they separated and created this new left-wing party. Looks much more modern, very good candidate, and they surpassed the votes the Socialist Party had. But the big, big winner was Ayuso. Ayuso, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, was an unknown journalist, got into politics. Casado put her in that position. No one knew what she was about. And she has become, in the last 2 years, a one-off within the Conservative Party. I would compare it a bit to what happened with Boris Johnson. He wasn't your typical politician brought into the discipline of the Conservative Party, but he's been a little bit of a one-off, a personality type. But Ayuso is a little bit like that. She's gained the trust of a lot of young voters, and also on the what we call the red belt or the working class areas of Madrid, by offering the phrase was freedom or communism, which is a total exaggeration, of course. But on the other hand, we had the left-wing party saying democracy or fascism, as if Mussolini was going to arrive in Madrid followed by an army of black shirts, which is obviously wasn't going to be the case. But that how tense it was. One thing that we need to look at is the participation in the election was very high. It was the highest this has ever been for a regional vote. And the left-wing parties thought that by calling to participation in the election, they would gain more votes and the thing would be closer. But as it happened, it turned out to be the opposite. So the PP party benefited for the high participation. And Ayuso is almost seen now as a little hero. Consequences of that, as I said, Ciudadanos is almost disappeared of the political scene. We'll see in the next elections what happened, but it seems to me that that's going to be the case. And the thing that causes celebration for me is the fact that after doing very badly Podemos, Pablo Iglesias has decided to leave politics. And that deserves a bottle of champagne, I'll tell you. that's the reading of that election. Now, the PP are now thinking there's a change of cycle in Spanish politics and there soon will be a party that will be fighting for government in the next general elections. I think we'll have to wait and see because it's still a long wait for a general election. Ayuso is very charismatic, but Casado, which is the main leader of the Conservative Party, is not so charismatic and is not so well liked as Ayuso is. So that's the reading of this election. A lot of noise for very little consequence, apart from the residents of the Madrid area.
Alf, your take on this? Twice this week we've seen, shall we say, working class strongholds or working class areas voting for right wing conservative type parties.
Yeah, I heard you talking with Dave before the programme, and this working class, does working class exist as it existed for many years? And I don't think you can compare what Andreas just said about the working class areas of Madrid, because you can go to most Spanish cities and there's a working class area, you know, denoted as a working class area. Whereas when you go to the UK, I mean, I was running elections years ago and we stopped using that. If you go to all the election people, they have all this A1, Bs, B1, B2, B3, B4, you know, all, and they put people into lots of different classes for what. And I used to argue with the guy that did it for the Labour Party because they used to do it on the basis of how much money they had or whether they had a car or whether they had a washing machine, stuff like that. And I think, even today, I think the Labour Party misses the plot. There was never, I mean, I come from a working class background, but that's because we worked. But that didn't make me less aspirational for my kids. It didn't make me less aspirational for the whole family, brothers, you know, mum, dad, whatever. So, and then you add, which is the group in 94 onwards, the group that we targeted most for were traditionally called middle class. They're not middle class. They were people that had a bit more money, tended to send their kids to university, had all the, you know, fineries of living, but were still aspirational. So in order to win that election, I know in the end it became a landslide, but where we started from, I was working in the 52nd most marginal seat and Labour needed 56. I don't know how many more they got, but they got a lot more. But we were targeting everything at aspirational working class, aspirational middle class. And the working class and middle class became, it disappeared. So if you remember all them years ago, we had a little card with the five pledges on. And they just banged the same, it was the same message. And that's what I think politicians of today are missing the point. They're still trying to, you know, the tomb of here's all our politics, this is what we stand for. And what was different, I think, in the Madrid elections was that she kept to a pretty simple message. And this is as a foreigner, so I don't get into all the intricacies of the Spanish stuff. But her message to me, you know, across the television, radio, whatever, papers, was quite simple. And that simple was, we don't like the socialists being in government. Simple message. If you want the socialists in government, you do. So whatever words they used, like freedom or communism, and what was the other one with fascism?
Democracy
or fascism. I mean, that's all eyewash election. That's stuff that they say. And that's when you know they've lost the plot. Because that is not the plot, is it? The plot was, do Madrid want to be governed by the socialists in government? It's a bit like, do the Scots want to be governed by the English? Simple question. I think Madrid is now, it's a bit like Barcelona and Catalonia, isn't it? It's different from the rest of Spain. They want autonomy, bigger autonomy.
The problem I see with the left-wing parties, not only in Spain but also in the rest of Europe, is that the fight for the working class, which is the core of the idea of socialism, has almost become secondary, because the working class in Europe are people who work, who've got at least a minimum wage established, they've got holiday paid, they've got an hours of work and so on. So that part of the ideology of it is already almost covered. In Spain, less than in other countries, because here you can go into health and safety protection measures and everything else. But anyway, so the left-wing parties have gone to go for ideology elsewhere. And they've been fishing in the liberal world, like feminism or the environment. Since when feminism was something that, socialist? It never was. The environment, again, the Green Parties of the 80s had nothing to do with socialist parties. But they're fishing for ideology to build up the ability to gain votes, and they're making their own those ideologies. They come from elsewhere, because protecting the working class, which is the core of what they should be doing, is something that, to a certain extent, as I said, at least in Europe, is something that's already covered.
Going to the WhatsApps again. Sheldon Froud on Viewpoints. I recall Labour removing assisted places in 1997 for education. It's not the same at all. Catalonia was never an independent nation. It's a province of Spain, and the Spanish constitution is watertight. The 952-78-4000 for your views on Viewpoint, welcome on calls. A lot of the criticism, or a lot of people have been saying that Ayuso got in, if you like, because she, this platform she stood on was freedom. Freedom to go out and have a beer, have a tapa, meet your friends. I mean, and you see people voting for that. I mean, reading the El País article earlier this week, you know, you've got young people saying, you know, they consider themselves left-wing, but the lax, you know, freedom, and the Madrid's approach to coronavirus, which was lax compared to other regions within Spain. I can hear the people in Valencia nodding their heads from here. Because, you know, this Oscar Zafra says, being able to go out, go to bars, get together with friends, I don't know, I don't understand a lot because I'm still young, but Ayuso convinced me the most.
Yes, and that was why I said it's been a very simple message. I don't like what the Spanish government are doing to me, and the lockdowns and all of that was part of that. So it was easy for her to go, well, we don't agree with the drinking ban. We don't agree with the meeting ban. We don't agree. So they're not agreeing. But they never said we're not agreeing. What they said is we want freedom. We want people to go for a drink. We want people to meet up. We want the freedom to move, which is you never deliver in elections. You never deliver negative messages. You never tell people what they don't want, and you never ask people to say no. It's always yes. Do you agree that we should have more freedom of movement under this lockdown? Yes. That's the answer, and that's what you campaigned on.
The truth is there was very little substance in the campaign. It was very simple messages and so on.
The problem
the Socialist Party had is that they sent confusing messages to the population. On one side, the candidate, Gabilondo, said, we're not going to raise any taxes, this is not the time to raise taxes. And that afternoon, the number two in the government said, taxes have to be raised. And that confuses the electorate, thinking, well, are we going to have higher taxes? We're not going to have higher taxes. Where the simplicity of the message, you know, freedom to go out and have a beer and a tapa, was much simpler to digest, and people have bought that. But the real substance behind when you want a clear path of what's going to be done and how schools are going to be helped, and the choice of schools, and how resources are going to go into health centres and everything else, all of that was out of the campaign. Nobody talked about that, which are the real issues. There was all
all about that if they were sending letters, threatening letters here and there, but nothing that would make any difference to the day-to-day life in Madrid.
I agree to a certain extent, but again, a lot of this is media driven. It's, you know, people, even politicians who come on and profess, you know, we want them, the working class people should be voting socialist, you know, pile of nonsense. And you said the core of socialism is wrong, and it's called, the core of socialism has always been about helping people who are worse off than you. It's never been about raising the poor out of poverty. I mean, that was the 1920s, 1930s, when they started to win socialist support. But there was a socialist. They were a right-wing socialist called Whigs. And then the Liberals come along. They never quite gave it, you know, for the bottom. After the working class people...
The Liberals were there before the socialists.
Of course, yeah. Of course, they were here 2 centuries ago. But what happens is that, you know, you create this party and you assume it's going to go on a roll because they won an election. They won the first election after the Second World War in the UK. They beat Churchill.
Clement Attlee.
No, it wasn't Clement Attlee. But nevertheless, Labour won.
Was.
Well, OK, it was Clement Attlee. Who gives a toss? It was the Labour Party. The Labour Party won. It was the first time they'd won an election. And it lasted 4 years. Mm. And it got beaten by Winston Churchill. And you go, why was that? That's when they introduced the NHS. That's when they did this and when they did that. And it's because of this misunderstanding. I heard Dave on his show before this, and he said, I come from a council estate, and yeah, it's very working class, and it's notably, right across Britain, council estates were the worst turnout places. Yes, when they turned out Labour, but only about 20%, if that, of the people on a council estate ever bothered to go and vote. So you put all your effort, and remember I did this as an election agent in a number of places, you put all your effort into these because somebody says council estates are good for Labour votes, and you go, they're not actually. Whoever are those 15 to 20%, my mate, who's now the leader of the GLC, He was the lead councillor in Greenwich, and he got elected on 11% of the ward where he came from. 11%. And he led the fifth biggest budgeted borough in London. Massive Greenwich. Yeah, it's like where the dome is and all that. And they had all that power. So we never went to... We'd give them a leaflet once every 3 years. You didn't go to the council estates. They were either going to vote for you or they weren't going to vote. And that's where people then say, oh, but that's where the socialists are because they're working class. Not true. The socialists who I went to lived in private houses, nothing to do with Thatcher selling the council houses. They lived in private houses because they had aspirations. And again, the difference between most of Europe and the UK is that UK people want to own their own house, which is not true of the rest of Europe. They might own an apartment, but a lot of them are in rented accommodation. That doesn't happen in the UK. Buy your own house, live your own life, got your own castle, defend it. And so you end up with a different sort of socialism. And I'd come back on loads of things like feminism wasn't socialist, really. They started it. Then it became popular. And it became populist. And others then start to jump on the back of it. The Tories, remember, how many women did they have in Parliament? How many women did they have in their party? Never mind about in Parliament.
Back with more Viewpoint after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And we're back and we're live and we're lively. If you want to get involved with the show,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
and joined live in the studio by Alf Brewer and Andres Gallardo. Looking at the situation in Spain, at least that's our starting point, but as you know, on Viewpoint, we tend to go left and right and centre in all variations. Just want to come back to Madrid, because we'll look at the UK in the second hour of this show. But there's a former Spanish ambassador to the UK, a Catalan called, I think, and my pronunciation will be totally wrong, but Carles Casajuana.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Who wrote in Van La Vanguardia, of course, the paper of in Barcelona. He said, "Bearing the standard of freedom and defense of the Madrid way of life, Ayuso has portrayed herself as the protector of people's right to spend their money as they wish and the longing for a full life of a citizenry fed up with a pandemic like everybody else. Ayuso won big by flattering her constituents, by massaging their egos," as he wrote. "What she did," he explained, "after the election, was to hold up a mirror to them and show them an image that concurred with their idealized sense of themselves as unapologetic bon viveurs." So that's what one of the former Spanish ambassadors to the UK thinks that Ayuso did, by saying, you know, freedom. She also said Madrid or Caracas, I think, was one of the election slogans as well.
Yeah, I mean, those slogans were highly exaggerated from both sides. I have to say both sides played the same game. I think that what Ayuso appealed to say, look, I can run the region, you can have as much freedom as you like, and you take personal responsibility in terms of the health issues, you know. That's the message that is being sold well to people, saying, okay, well, let's have our freedom and let's be us who decide how we behave and how we're going to keep the social distancing and everything else. But let us go to work, let us go to bars, let us go to do all those things. And that's what's gone down really well. As opposed to a region like Catalonia, for instance, the restrictions there that have been brutal for a long, long time. And it's damaged the economy tremendously, where the best region in economic terms in Spain is Madrid. And the one thing that is quite interesting to look at the health figures, because of course they say, yeah, the economy is doing well, but you get a lot of, you know, people dying and people in hospital and so on. The incidence, which is, seems to be the how we're measuring the coronavirus, certainly in Spain. In Madrid, it's not the highest. There are higher incidence numbers in regions where they have harder lockdowns, like the Basque Country or La Rioja, for instance. Surely, because everything was open, should be the number one in terms of incidence of coronavirus. But it wasn't. It was high, but not the highest. And also you have to take into account that Madrid is a highly dense population, and the virus likes that density in order to spread. So the question is, if was she wrong to leave everything open, helping the economy and damaging health as much as other regions? I don't know if I expressed myself clearly there, but... Yeah. That's how it's been perceived by the voters who have gone and voted for her.
However you want to put it, whether it's the journal or whoever, I mean, the people, she was saying that people want to vote against suppression. We don't want to be suppressed. If the journal's right, I mean, I've written it down because this is absolutely critical to much of what's gone on in politics since the 1970s. There's nothing wrong in her saying, it's your money and we want you to spend your money the way you want to spend your money. There's absolutely nothing wrong in that for electioneering purposes. But it doesn't work if you want a socialist state, not a socialist state, if you want a state that looks after its poor, that looks after its ill, that looks after its young, that looks after its disabled, that looks after, because that means we've got to take money out of your money in order to pay for these people who aren't unfortunately, as well off as you are in all of those senses. So there's nothing wrong in that message for electioneering purposes. And I'll tell you for why. Because people always go, you can't say that, Alf. This is very Thatcher-like. It's exactly what she said. Own your own council house. Pay less taxes. We ain't going to tell you where to spend your money. We're going to stop these scroungers from scrounging off the benefit. We're going to reform the benefit system, and we're going to take it away. And I'm not saying she invented it, because it didn't, because a lot of it came from right wing South American countries, certainly from America, because there's this wild assumption in America that they're, you know, the Democrats are like Labour and the Republicans are like Tory, and it's nothing like that. It's called right wing and less right wing. That's what American politics is about. But they've always said we want you to spend your money the way you want to, which is why they've got a rubbish health service. It's why they have problems with their disabled people. Yeah, all manner of stuff that you can point at America, that great country, and say, well, we've got better than that. And it is an argument. Their public health system is rubbish compared to the national health system, but their private medical practices that make up for it are great for people who are a little bit more wealthy, a little bit more affluent. If you can afford to pay for your medical cover, then you'll get good service. If you can't afford it, you know, down the road, and you're not going to get it. That's you know, Thatcher brought that to life, and that's what this woman is sounding so much like. We're going to give it to you to do what you want with it. And you go, okay, so what are you going to do with a person who was born with a you know, some birth defect, who can't look after themselves? What are you going to do for them?
Yeah, the thing here is that she's presenting it as two different models. The socialist model, which is, yes, we'll take care of these, but you're going to have to pay high taxes, which is the message that has been sent across.
No, yeah. You're taking my money.
You're not taking, exactly. And the other model is, let's make the economy dynamic, so companies do well, they produce more, and naturally there's more revenue going to the state because the economy is more dynamic. And it seems that there was a choice of saying, do we want the system pay through the nose your taxes so you get the services, or let's make the economy dynamic and make those profitable companies pay their share towards the system.
In the history of In the history of right-wing politics in the world, that has never worked. We'll leave it that the rich will provide for the poor. That happened in the UK in the 1800s when they had poor houses, when they had free schools. Not free schools, they had charity schools. And I mean, we're not talking about not even 100 years ago. In the 1930s in the UK, kids were still going to schools that were paid for by rich people out of the kindness of their heart. That's not the way you run a country if you're trying to progress a country. You have to progress everybody. Remember, the lowest common denominator in any country is your weak point. Therefore, the stronger you make that weak point, the stronger your country becomes. So if you don't have thousands of people sitting outside supermarkets begging, if you don't have thousands of people sitting on the roadside with a leg missing begging, if you get rid of that, and I remember in the UK, and I'm sure Giles may vaguely remember it, but there was a place in London called Aldgate. It was an old church, and they used to have about 300 to 400 what we call tramps. They were down and outs, and they lived on the streets. And the first thing that was said by all governments, didn't matter about the policies, is like, we don't want that on the streets because that's what people say is the lowest common denominator. We don't want homeless people. Christ, there's more people homeless in London today than there's ever been, because they don't do enough as a government to try to sort that out. And most of that is because of mental medicine, I'll say that the nicest way.
Yeah.
Mental health care is so rock bottom in the UK. That's what these people drive themselves onto the roads, because they've got mental health issues. No, not because they're poor.
There is a flaw there in what you're explaining, is that the concept of let the rich pay for the poor. This is a socialist general idea. In real terms today, it doesn't work. And let me explain why. Because rich people, there are a handful of them, the big fortunes. The great majority are middle classes. And the only way of paying for the poor is by taxing the great majority of middle classes who are not flash by. Who's rich? If you earn 100 grand, are you rich? Or if you earn 80 grand a year, are you rich? And that's what the great majority of that middle ground, which is the middle class, they don't want to be taxed to the hilt. And even the left-wing parties realize that, and they say, no, we're not going to tax the middle class, we're going to tax the super rich. But the super rich, the revenue you get for taxing more the super rich, is not enough to do all the things they want to do. So the solution to that problem is to make the economy more dynamic and more profitable, with more employment, with more companies formed and everything else. The problem that we have in Spain is that we have a mentality of wanting the great majority to become civil servants, so they have a job for life, and they're, as I said the other day...
That's not true, Andreas. What Spain wants... No, it isn't. What Spain wants is no different to many other countries, especially throughout Europe, is they want the ability for people to get a job. However well paid or not, the last thing you want, like in the UK, you know, people who go to work who are then reliant on benefits. Nobody who goes to work in the UK should ever be reliant on benefits. There should be a living wage. We don't have a living wage. We don't have a living wage almost anywhere. And if you took it in London, they was talking to the lower paid Londoners, and they give them a minimum wage. A minimum wage in London is less than poverty level. So you have to then say, what is it you want? But that's as a country. And the reason why I say about, you know, this all starts from somewhere. My mum lives in Chippenham, in Wiltshire. I can take you to the school that was donated by the local, whoever he was, farmer bloke who owned...
A philanthropist, you mean, basically?
Well, no, it was charity. Yeah. Philanthropy isn't charity. Charity is charity. It's not somebody who's saying, I'm going to set up a school and I'm going to charge people to go there. It was out of the kindness. And it wasn't one rich person. Groups of them get together. I can take you to the church where they built a thing by the side of the church, which was for people who didn't go to church, but they wanted them to have some religious things, like Sunday school stuff. I can take you to the hospital. It's now called a cottage hospital, but originally, it was the hospital. It was built by people with money for the poor. It wasn't built by people with money for the people with money, because they had their private medicine, even back in the 1800s. And that's where it all starts from. So I don't know what happened in Spain. I can tell you what I think. Spain grew because of tourism. And the first thing that tourism did was suck all the people from inside Spain to outside of Spain. It sucked them all to the coast. And the coast couldn't cope with all that. So you ended up with peasant farmers working in bars. You had peasant farmers who were painters, peasant farmers who were gardeners, peasant farmers who were labourers, peasant farmers. They were never anything other than peasant farmers for 50 years until you educated them all. But what you didn't do is you just didn't throw them to the wolves, because you had laws that said, if you're an English person and you come to the Costa del Sol and you set up a bar, you must employ a Spanish person. They had to force a law on people to say that, because that's how they spread the wealth. I mean, otherwise, Spain couldn't have afforded all these people. The farms were going to pot because everybody's in a bar on the coast.
Right, then, everybody's in a bar on the coast. Go take a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively, to put it mildly. My goodness, it's good to have guests back in the studio again.
Put it this way, we don't listen to the adverts.
Exactly. Blimey. I think we should just dispense them all together. We seem to have a technical problem, by the way. Apologies if you're trying to get through. There's an issue with the telephone calls. So we have our people on it.
So we've got a call-in programme.
We've got a call-in programme.
No call-ins.
When you're on, Alf, we don't need one. plans. looking at the.
Thank you as a compliment.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Backhand or otherwise.
No, at all. But you can get in contact with us via the WhatsApp, please. +34, not by phone, but by if you want to send me a text message, which is +34 645 99 67 95. You can drop me a message on the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. You can email me at studio@tre.radio. Looking at some of the WhatsApps come in during the last 5 minutes or so, we are now at the situation with what would Trump do with Boris Johnson? Trump is policies and behaviour. What's wrong with paying high taxes is another. Why do people still assume paying tax makes paying less tax makes people happier? It doesn't. It's a total fallacy. The middle classes are not cash rich, though. They're asset rich. Most are on the never-never. Credit cards, lease cars, etc. Another one coming in saying, Al forgets Spain got money from the EC-EEC-EU. Spain isn't a net contributor today, although it's still on the cusp. Meanwhile, another one coming in. Well, Alf, this is from... Alf, you appear on this show, you know, and they message in. Well, Alf, you've certainly made a mark on me today. Lots to reflect on, ideas I'd never thought of. Bien hecho. That's from Ian in Camberley. 95... Well, you can't dial in at the moment, so it's WhatsApp me, +34 645 99 67 95. You can email me, studio@tre.radio. You can send me a message as well on the Facebook group, which is Talk Radio Europe Official, if you want to get in touch with the show. Into the last 6 minutes or so, the first half of Viewpoint. Andreas?
I'm going to call Alf. Alf Ayuso, because of the simplicity of the message that he's sending there, you know, where tourism came and people went and worked in bars. That wasn't like that at all. The migration movement in Spain started before tourism, and he went to areas where there was industrial output, mainly from Extremadura and from Andalusia. They went to Catalonia, where there were factories and textiles and siderurgy in the Basque country, and that created the movement leaving what we now call the empty Spain. But that wasn't people going to work in bars in the Costa del Sol. There could be an element of that, but let's not forget that Spain has got more than tourism. Although tourism is a very important industry in Spain, which amounts to 13%.
It's the biggest industry then, isn't it?
It's exactly the same amount of GDP that produces the car manufacturing in Spain. So 25% of the economy in Spain is car manufacturing and tourism. But let's not forget that it's a very strong agriculture in the primary sector. The agriculture is very strong in regions like Lleida that you mentioned off air
now,
just a minute ago.
Now it is.
Which is very, very powerful.
Now it is, but it wasn't.
It's always been.
No,
I was born there.
You didn't have massive farms like you've got today. You can go up to the top of the mountains behind here and you can look for 75 kilometres and all you can see is tomatoes. And you look in another direction, another 100 kilometres, and you see strawberries.
That came later. The industry was in place, but the mass production of agriculture came later.
So in the fields of
Almeria and so on.
Okay, so what in Andalusia? But the industry was there that attracted people from inland out towards the coast. Tell me one industry, one big industry anywhere in Andalusia outside of Sevilla. Tell me one industry that attracted people from inland to down here.
No, what I was trying to correct, Alf, is the perception that you send across to say that everyone in middle of Spain moved to bars working on the coast, because that wasn't the case at all.
They moved to the coast.
Some moved to other parts. There was a lot of migration because Spain was very, very poor and people had to move. And a lot of people went to Switzerland, Germany, France, and so on to look for work.
Portuguese went to England. We know that.
Yeah. Right then. Okay, we've done the migration issues now then. Let's look. What does the election in Madrid mean for Podemos and Ciudadanos? Are they a spent political force? Andres?
OK, Ciudadanos, I think that will eventually disappear because all the... unless something else happens and there's another big scandal at the PP party. I mean, the problem with Ciudadanos, I'm quite disappointed that that party is going to go because it was a liberal... centre-right party that was gained popularity with all the corruption and scandals of the PP. So you would think the voters naturally would move to a new party with new people that were clean and had a liberal agenda. And that is something that is quite easily sold, and low intervention from the state, low taxation, encouraging entrepreneurs and everything else. So that sort of concept. But unfortunately, they are the ones who are going to be out of the question. One thing that's happened to Ciudadanos is a little bit what happened to the Liberal Party in the UK. Once you go into coalition to govern, because they are governing with in different regions of Spain, Andalusia is one example. Once you go into a coalition with a bigger party, everything that government does, the credit seems to be going to the bigger party, not the one in coalition. And if you look at the coalition of Conservatives and Liberals, the ones who won the election after that coalition was the Conservative Party, although the influence of the Liberals could have been very positive and in their policies. So I think that's a little bit what's happened to Ciudadanos. They're going to disappear because they've gone into these coalitions where the strength and the PP, the Conservative Party, to come out on top of that. The other side of the story is that now, Podemos has got a direct competitor now in Más Madrid. Más Madrid is a party that came from part of Podemos, but they were a little bit more tamed, if you like, not as wild as Pablo Iglesias. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem they have is that they have no infrastructure in the rest of Spain. It's only a Madrid party. And you, Alf, of all people, will know, without infrastructure in all the towns and all the villages and everything else, you get squashed. You can't have... A little bit what's happened to Ciudadanos. Ciudadanos had a big figurehead in Rivera, then Arrimadas did very well. But if you go to the towns and the villages around here, you don't know who they are. You don't know who the representatives are. You cannot engage with them because they're not there. And that's a little bit what's happened. So Más Madrid will probably have that problem. But Podemos and the figure of Pablo Iglesias are less and less popular, and he'll continue to do so. That's why he had to step down, because he was toxic for his own party.
Now, so they've got... The first thing I wrote down is only in Madrid. These parties will disappear in Madrid, that's for definite. Around the rest of Spain, I'm not so sure, because there's still some movement for them. And the single biggest issue is, it's all well and good wanting a liberal right of centre. There's no such thing that exists, really. They do. They pop up, they survive for a while, they grow, and then they collapse. And that's Europe over. Modern times. We're not talking about the 1920s or 30s when liberals were big. We're talking about in modern politics, the liberals, they get squashed, like you were saying. They just get squashed out of it. And they get squashed out of it because they're forced to go into these alliances in order to gain some foothold, some power, some influence on what's happening. And then they lose their identity. You know, liberals in England got squashed out. We're going to have free, no student fees. That soon got squashed out, didn't it? That's what destroyed the liberals. And they're going to take years to come back. And I will come back afterwards with my famous saying, politics is the art of the possible. But the possible can only be achieved if you've got power.
Wait, stand by for that one after the international and national news. Back with Viewpoints.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Yes, we're back, live and lively, joined in the studio, but by social distancing as well, to keep them apart. Andres Gallardo and Alf Brewer, good to have you with us. Now, unfortunately, we have a technical issue from outside, which means I am unable to take phone calls in. I thought you'd all been quiet this morning, so apologies to you if you're trying to get hold, but you won't be able to get us via the fire, by the phones even. Flaming arrows through the window are acceptable, obviously, as always, but you can get hold of us via the WhatsApp, +34 645 99 67 95. You can't call me on the WhatsApp, but you can send me a message. You can email me at studio@tre.radio, and you can leave a message on the Facebook page, which is Talk Radio Europe Official. And it's to the WhatsApps that I go to first. We've got 55 minutes of viewpoint to go, and this one in from Peter, hi. When I started work for the London Borough of Hillingdon in 1979 as an apprentice arbourist, I soon became a thank you very much, shop steward, as I finished my apprenticeship. I was always shocked when borough workers shouted for Maggie. I kept saying you wouldn't have your ex-council house if socialist ideas hadn't built them. I got the last work when at a meeting with the chief exec and council, they said no matter what, jobs must be privatised even if it costs more. That was the then Tory ethos. Jobs went, vote Labour. Another one in here. La Peseta made Spain the great country that it was. The euro destroyed all wage structures here. Cheers from William. And this one in from Richard. Tourism is 12% of Spanish GDP. Car industry is almost 10%. Right then. There we go. So, joined by Andres and Alf.
As much as the
the tourism is on the rise, car manufacturing.
And it's not. I don't know. I mean, some left-wing parties, they rubbish tourism. Tourism is a great product, and we sell that product very well. And the fact that we sell it well means that we get a lot of visitors up until COVID, of course, but we were number one destination in the world.
It's also a shame,
second
though,
isn't
it?
More visitors. So we have a good product and we sell it well.
Your third biggest industry is the banking and finance industry, and the banks have made 18,000 people redundant. There's probably another 20,000 on the way because, I'm not being funny, but you just got to look overseas. Britain looked at what was happening in America. As soon as they did online banking, I mean, it wasn't about shutting branches down, but everybody goes online. I don't, if I have to go into the bank, it's a really painful experience. So everything you do is online banking. And the first thing you know is you're not going to stand in front of a cashier, so you don't need the cashier anymore. So their job.
You'll probably go for breakfast just before it's your turn.
No, every time. I walk into the bank at 10 o'clock. Where is he? Where's Pepe? Oh, he's round the caf. He'll be back in 10 minutes, which is a Spanish 10 minutes, so you're there for half an hour. I find it extremely hilarious. But also, why don't Spain see what happens? For instance, you allow supermarkets in, the big supermarket chains, they open from 9 in the morning till, under normal terms, up past 8 till 10 o'clock at night, you can get a supermarket. And then all your little shops, all your shops that are going to be closed because of these big supermarkets, they all close for 2 hours in the middle of the day. They don't open till 10 o'clock in the morning, and even if they do, nobody will serve you. And then they're closing at 6 o'clock, and then they open again half an hour later till 8 o'clock at night. If you don't learn the lesson of the UK, it wasn't the big shopping centres, it was supermarkets. The big supermarkets that are built on the edge of towns killed the town centres. They've had to do all manner of things in the UK to bring back the town centres. And you go to the town centre, every other shop is a charity shop or a gift shop or, some strange thing. And then you have to reinvent what your town centre is about. And I'm not being funny, it's because they can't knock down, 150-year-old town centres and rebuild them without some massive input of money. So the massive input of money is like the guys who are building that thing at Torremolinos. You know, it's going to be the biggest shopping area in the world. It's enormous. We have a theme park and a whatever and a whatever. You tell me how much of Torremolinos is going to be left after they open that. Yeah, nothing. It will all go, the whole lot. You'll have charity shops or empty shops or derelict shops or shops converted into apartments. You will see it destroyed and you go, do you not understand? And they go, oh, we're creating jobs. Yeah, you're creating 10,000 jobs in this new shopping centre and you're taking away 15,000 jobs because they're always doubling up and trebling up and they work for next to nothing. And you just go, and it's about how. You can't stop the change. That's the one thing we've learned in history. You can't stop the change, but you can manage it. And what they don't seem to do is to manage the change. The banks in Spain, you know, when I first came here, blimey, it wasn't a bank on every corner. It was a bank on top of a bank on every corner. And as soon as they go, right, we're gonna start merging these. Why? Because the EU say you can't cope with this and we're not going to lend you money. So look at BBVA. They're going to make another 8,500 people redundant. They're going to close down half their branches. And it comes as a big shock, and you go, what's the shock? It's called online banking.
Mm. You can't put everything in the same pot. I mean, what is clear is the society, business and so on are in the process of a transformation that it's been accelerated by COVID, I have to say. But that is something that that is happening. The banking industry is going to be reshaped and restyled and it's in the process of doing so. Retail is going through the same process. So we're changing because the digital world is here and we're going to have to retrain and create new jobs. So they were saying that the 10-year-olds now, the jobs at school, the jobs that they will have, they don't exist yet. So everything is going to change, even from lawyers, doctors, and everything. They talking now like a dermatologist can do with an application can look at you things on your skin and everything, and they can so everything is going to change because we are in the process of change. But you can't put everything in the same pot. One of the things that these famous funds they're going to be allocated to Spain from the EU. One of the things the EU have said is that you're going to have to look at investing some of it and in the future and to implement all these changes that they are coming. We've done things like, it's an article from an economist that actually, when I read it, I thought, it's not that wrong. It sounds a little bit harsh, but all these furlongs, the ERTEs,
the furlongs, furlongs, yeah. Is the horse race.
Sorry,
you see what I get wrong.
The
ERTEs
in Spanish, they shouldn't be ERTEs. They should be people going into unemployment because the reality is the jobs where they're holding onto, these jobs are going to disappear anyway. So these people should be now not waiting, getting paid to wait for a job that is not going to exist, but should be retraining now. So when they go back to work, they are half a different set of skills.
But that then defeats the objective of the wherever she is. She the mayor of Madrid or the
who?
Ayuso.
Yeah.
She's premier.
The regional government.
Yeah. But is she the mayor or
no? The
president.
She's the president of the region. Yeah,
so
yeah.
She's the president. And she comes out and makes these statements, which you've just absolutely encapsulated is the wrong train of thought. How do you retrain your people in the country without investing in the training programs? And you can't invest in training programs based on private industry putting a bit of money in. You can't do that. Your country has to invest. And just so that we're clear, all this change isn't new, is it? We've had change. I worked in British Telecom when it was equipment that was 1920s that went up and round and filter bits and wore out. And now it's all Wi-Fi. It's the fastest technology change in any industry, all driven by the chip, of course. So technology
And the fish.
Has always been the fish. No,
sorry.
It's not a fish and chips. Yeah. We used to have fish, but it wasn't the same.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
Different technology. But it's always been the future. Technology has always been the future in any industry. Better mining, better shipbuilding, better this, was all driven by technology. And it always will be. So you were talking about that. My grandson's just had an operation, a serious stomach operation, and they did it with a camera, a pair of scissors, and a pair of prongs through his belly button. Yeah, you work that out. That's technology at its highest. So he doesn't have a major scar. He wasn't, you know, I mean, I've got an 8-inch scar from when they operated on me, and he had a similar operation. And he went through his belly button. He had his appendix taken out through his belly button. All of that, you know, the technology that drives that, that's where your jobs for the future are. But you've got to, you're quite right, Andreas, they've got to start doing it now. So in schools, everything should be driven towards technology training in whatever state. You've still got to have some of the old stuff. You've still got to have, you know, people who can paint, people who can build, people who can do all that. But technology is the jobs of the future. Robots may take out the workers in a car factory, but the people making the robots should be as many, if not more, and technically experienced than the people who used to work on the line riveting wheel trims. Mm. That's what it should be.
Right then, we're going to take a short break and then we're going to move with Viewpoint. Just want to say you want to say something on this point before we go to a break. You're fine.
He does really.
No, we're going to go to an ad break. Then we'll come back and I want to talk about the situation in the UK.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Joined in the studios by Andres Gallardo, and you may have noticed by Alf Brewer. Good to have him back as always. We have a problem still. We're working like little Watsits in a wood, shop trying to get it back online, but we are trying to get the phone lines up and running. Apologies. I know that you're out there. I know you're trying to get hold of me, but that is just something we're having to live with today. This being just about in the 21st century, we have WhatsApps +34 645 99 67 95. You can email me, yes, the old emergency mail, studio@tre.radio. You can Facebook me as well on Talk Radio Europe Official. You could, in fact, I suppose, tweet me as well if you fancied, or even leave a comment on the Instagram page. But let's keep it simple. I'm trying to juggle enough plates here as it is, and I've got live guests in the studio. It's like Christmas come all over again. But there you go. We're going to move away from the situation in Spain because we want to have a look at the UK. It's been 3 weeks since we had a Viewpoint and there's been quite a lot going on. And Kate in Costa Blanca, good morning to you, saying after three missing weeks with melodramatics in the UK, probably in here as well, we need to discuss corruption in PPE contracts and refurbishing number 10. And it kind of pulls in. This in from John in Norfolk, saying, what does Alf think was the reason for the Labour poor performance in recent elections? And does he think that Keir is too honest and quiet to beat the less than honest and populist bozo? That's from Boris Johnson. Thank you for that comment as well. And so let's go to, sorry, something just happened. Let's go to, so those first points. I mean, Labour seems to, you know, we were in the weeks running up to these elections. If you look at Prime Minister's Question Time and what happened then, and Keir Starmer seemingly dissecting Boris Johnson in Prime Minister's Question Time, and Boris Johnson flapping and losing his cool, etc., then what happened? What do we think happened with the results that has seen a major Labour reshuffle, has seen the Conservatives crowing about their victory with the blue wall, and also, as another point, I mean, the situation north of the border, or the situation with Scotland and the SNP. Alf?
Well, first of all, before people can't ring in and have a go at me.
Well, hopefully.
You know, if TRE had invested in their technology, they could have employed an XBT engineer.
Well, you see, the funny thing
it's
is...
It's working!
Now, the funny thing is, I'm loath to say that now, because obviously we've had a very quiet hour and 20 minutes, but the phone lines are back on. They're back on?
Yeah.
Congratulations. Okay, so, and I know that we're a serious programme here, occasionally, on Viewpoint, but the phone lines are back on, so I can't help but give one of these. So...
Wait, you don't play music on...
I don't play music, but that wasn't music, that was just a stab. So if you want Alf, get your point across, and then we'll open the floodgates.
Yeah, I'll try not to take too long as well.
You're watching over your call-in now, you're always having
I shall baffle them with non-science. Why did Labour have a poor performance? You know, there's a number of reasons. And I phoned in a couple of weeks back when you was online, and I said at the time that it's very difficult for Starmer. I think Peter from Islington agreed with me, or John.
John
from Islington. Sorry, John. It's very difficult for Starmer to stand up and just continually oppose the government during the virus. You know, it's like we're all pulling together and we're all trying to get... You can't say we're working as a country and then spend all your time having a go. But I do think on occasion they should have dissected it a bit better. I'm not into the spat. The spat between Angela, what's her name, and Keir Starmer is... That's a boss saying to someone, we didn't have a very good campaign. You were the campaign manager. Sorry, we're going to change the campaign manager. It happens in all walks of life. You know, if you lose an election, they don't re-nominate you. Well, usually you don't get re-nominated for the same election post because you've had your go and you lost, and you're probably never going to win again. You know, Livingston, a living proof of that. Nevertheless, what had happened is we've got this problem, and it's not even the North. It was this red band, as Andrea said about the blue band in Madrid. Yeah. You know, you've got this red band that goes across the country to the north of the Midlands, but it did obviously affect it from the North Midlands upwards. But this time in the elections, the Northwest had different results to the Northeast, and then everybody concentrated on it. But Labour made major inroads in southern England. Yeah, they won the Isle of Wight. I mean, who would ever think that, you know, that's been a Tory stronghold for bleeding years, and all of that South Coast stuff. So I think it's the dynamic, and I think that we do get to this thing. The people, these people who were traditionally classed, and I think someone said, whoever it was it Angela, said that we were patronised. We've spent too long patronising the heartland voters for a long time. It's not about patronising. I don't think... I haven't heard any Labour MPs, any Labour campaigners patronising Labour voters in the north of England. They tended to rely on them without, you know, going over the top on campaigning. But that's not patronising them. It's not saying, oh, you wonderful Labour supporters in wherever, in Manchester or Newcastle or Sunderland or Middlesbrough, all these heartland places that gradually drifted away from Labour. We had the problem, and I think the same has happened in Scotland. We now have a problem that it's less about politics and more about where you stand on the EU. So you're either for in or you're for out. And those who are for out will always be traditionally, we want out, we want to stay out, and we want everything to be done that you promised us, which is about 50%. We're not going to argue about the odd 1%. It's about 50% of the country think like that. And the other 50% of the country say it's the wrong decision to make, and we've got to start building more inroads. And the lies. They weren't lies. They were stupid negotiations that meant... So the people of Northern Ireland, for example, you know, where they stand on a border that's not a boulder, that's a boulder in the middle of a sea, it's a boulder. They put a boulder in that they said they would never do because it breaks the Good Friday Agreement. So you've got all these things going on, and all amongst it, you've got the Tories going, we've got the greatest vaccination programme going, probably in the world, but we'll give it Europe, certainly in Europe. We're on top of the thing. We're now... You know, lifting some of the things. It's all looking rosy in the garden, and it's because of us in power. And what they never had was some powerful people. I will say, this is a personal opinion, and I did talk to Charles before. I had Rachel Reeves working in my campaign team when I was the agent in Eltham, in the 52nd most marginal seat in the country, when Labour needed 56. Her and her sister came in. She was 18, her sister was 16, and you could see within 10 minutes how on top of how cutey they were about politics. About an 18-year-old, I wasn't even into politics until I was 23-ish, something like that, when I'd been to work, when somebody took me aside and said, do you know what they're doing to you? And, you know, and taught me about it. They were so, and if you listen to her over the period, she hasn't been on that often, but when she came on, she was on Andrew Marr, and Andrew Marr's trying to do his normal thing of, oh, you're beating me on this point, so I'll talk over the top of you, and she just absolutely cut him to shreds. Mm-hmm. Absolutely cut him to shreds. But what you need is people who have got that capability and a bit of charisma. So it's not about whether Starmer is quiet or he's too honest. That's irrelevant. What he doesn't have, which is somebody I think Sharon asked me a long time ago, what do you think about? You know, he's different. He's different to the last character. I'm glad he's gone, Corbyn. You know, Christ Almighty. And then they wheel out their old Father McDonald. They wheel him out to have a pop at the way Starmer's working, and he says, "Oh, you've just scapegoated Angela Rayner. You've scapegoated her. You've blamed her for the fault." No, she was the campaign manager. It was her fault. You know, take the blame. It wasn't Starmer. Starmer wasn't running the campaign. He was the leader, but he doesn't design the campaign. He doesn't bring in the organisers. And the Labour Party, unfortunately, haven't got enough money to bring in all the organisers. People don't understand it. Professional organisers make such a change, and the Tories have got loads of them. So there's a whole pile of things that have gone wrong. But in Starmer's case, he's made the change, and what they've got to do, the party have got to do, is surround him with charismatic people who will, because you can't change his charisma. What you can do is surround him with people who have their own. And if you watch Rachel Reeves, she has got charisma. You know, people who walk into it. I was in a town hall with 500-600 people, and Tony Blair walked in a door about, oh, I don't know, 100 metres away. And you could feel him walk in the room. You could feel him walk in the room, even though you couldn't see him. And that's charisma. Yeah. When they walk into a room, and people just, is a buzz. And that's what Starmer's, he's not that he's too quiet or too honest. He is too normal. And he needs to break out of that and become more powerful speaker. You know, Kinnock's probably one of the best speakers in Parliament in recent history. People belittled him because he could waffle on, and sometimes he was drab. Churchill and Kinnock made, you know, pronounced speeches that meant something, and are remembered for it. So Starmer has got to do more of that, and whatever changes. And by the way, I don't think they sacked anybody, did they? They just moved all the seats.
This is the reshuffle kerfuffle, as it's being called. I mean, he hasn't signed anybody. He's moved people to various different places.
Well, he's swapped Rachel for Angela. Well, swap.
But it was described as... Andreas, just come in with a point.
Yeah, if you allow me to sort of... looking from the outside into what's happening in the UK, and I'm going to simplify things in the way of Ayuso does, but I think the perception of what's happening in the UK is that... going through a very traumatic experience that lasted years with Brexit, finding a chaotic management of the early stages of the pandemic, now, with some decision-making, Brexit got done, and the vaccination program being a success, the perception of the people is the UK is going in the right direction. And that's, I think that's why the success of the Conservative Party, because they are taking all the credit for what's happened there. I know it's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but the perception from where I'm looking at outside into the UK is that yes, although I'm against, or always was, and anti-Brexit, but the reality is that things got done,
The lockdown was hard, but it's given some results, and the vaccination program is a success. So the natural result is that people go with that.
But shouldn't have been a case if you look at it. It shouldn't have come to this, surely, because Alf. I mean, if you look at the way Storm was holding himself in Prime Minister's questions and the allegations as Kate said, as texted in, saying, you know, we had the PPE contracts going to friends of the others, you know, cronyism with alleged cronyism within the Conservative Party. The whole situation about the redecoration of Number 10's, you know, the apartment. I mean, the government has been saying that these are issues that are important to the people. And would you then argue that this election has shown that those issues of perceived cronyism, of perceived, you know, untruths coming out from the Prime Minister's office don't actually matter to the electorate?
Well, yeah, I have a great theory about this because it's a simple question. Has anyone ever taken any notice of these sorts of issues ever to elect Cameron, to elect Theresa May, to elect Johnson, to listen to all the nonsense? Has anybody ever taken any notice? And the answer is no. In Spain it was different because people did listen to the stuff about PP and did react to it. It's not happened in the UK since Cameron came to power. And you just go, so what did Cameron get right? Well, he lied about everything. He got in on the basis of, I've got to keep the Tory party together, so I'm going to give the people a vote to see if they want to leave Europe. I don't agree with it, but I'm going to give it a vote anyway. What a pile of But Cameron is just so more than two-faced. So he did that. What also, I suppose he's annoying more than anything, is I have to listen to all these Labour people who somehow are magically important. Andy Burnham is a serious big mayor. He's the mayor of Manchester, which is a singularly big job. And he comes out and he says, well, what the Labour Party got to do? It's got to stop all this left-right infighting. He was one of those who started it. He stood for election as the leader of the party and created the problem where we ended up with Corbyn and sat back and said nothing about Corbyn being elected. Yeah, he got elected to the mayor of Manchester shortly after that contest and never said a word about Corbyn. Never said, oh, I'm going to rely on Corbyn to help Manchester. Never any of that. And then we got McCluskey, the general secretary of Unite. Unite puts in, I don't know, 3/4 of the money into the Labour Party. So therefore they demand that the Labour Party will do as we say or else. And it's called, go away, McCluskey, because that's not how your members think. You do not represent your members. I was taught a lesson many, many years ago when we couldn't understand. We lost the election to Thatcher. And it was, you know, I don't know what it was. It was about 62% of trade unionists voted for Thatcher. That was all the profiling. He goes, how's that? How can that happen? And my political mentor said, because trade union members are a reflection of society. And they're a reflection because they're workers. Mm-hmm. They're not working class. They are aspirational people who want to see better for the people coming behind them. And you ignore them. You ignore them at your peril. And just one final thing. This is what always gets... I did say many moons ago to you, Giles, here's the manifesto at a glance. Right? I will keep saying to people, this is what they promised. So this is what Johnson promised. If you're all listening out there in the big world, get Brexit done by the end of January and no extension to the transition period. Well, I think he failed on that, but he hasn't once come out and said, oh, I got that wrong. I mean, we all knew that it would have to change, but that was their election promise. At the time, remember, it was September, October, whatever it was, before the January, and it was, and so we added it, and we're going to get rid of it. What a pile of nonsense. They will say whatever it is to get power. Because once you've got the power, then you can make the necessary changes. Then you can aspire to what you want to deliver. The art of politics is to deliver the possible. You only deliver the possible when you're in power. And that's what we haven't got. And I was so angry. Well, no, one last thing.
Yep.
Sturgeon in Scotland all what she went through was the biggest election platform I've ever seen. Free election work. Because she comes across as being, even if she lied, even if she didn't lie, what was the truth, what wasn't the truth. She was there on the telly every single day banging on about SNP, SNP, SNP. It didn't matter what she stood for. And at the same time, you know, I'm not Scottish. I have a lot of Scottish friends. And I would imagine that most of those people are saying we are fed up with the English telling us what we can and can't do. It was the English who said we had to leave the EU, not Scottish. It was the English who said you can't have a referendum, or are saying you can't have a second referendum. It was the English who dictate and deal with the finances of Scotland. You know, at the end of the day, they give them a budget. They don't let them tax people and they keep the tax. They do have a separate tax, but that's over and above national taxation. The same with everything that they do. So I would imagine the Scots are sitting there spitting feathers, quite rightly, and then what you do is you drive people, and it's got nothing to do with left-right politics. It's got nothing to do with socialism or nationalism. This is all about in or out. You've separated, you've divided almost 50-50, and it's been proved on the elections this time round. You know, one seat short of a majority, less than 51%, you know, vote for the SNP. They might have this majority for a referendum using other parties. But in effect, you've completely divided your country. How the hell are you ever going to rebuild that? I really have my doubts. The only way is when you have a revolution of the people who say, we want better education, we want better health, we want better this. And you ain't going to get it while the pandemic's going on, because again, she seemed to be doing everything that the Scottish people want.
Going to take a short break and then back for the final 17 minutes or so of Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. We go live to the lines. Good morning, caller. Thank you for bearing with us. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm Kate Costa-Blanco.
Hallelujah, Kate. Good to hear from you.
it's probably just a marker for next time, but if people could be quite briefer, it would allow more people to get in. The point about the PP contracts and the dishonesty about that is very serious, particularly as it was announced. Johnson had promised that the victims of the cladding issue with Grenfell Tower would not have to pay, and now they've gone back on it. So just at the time, coincidentally at the time that he's flashing someone's money out on luxurious thing off the Downing Street.
Yes, the infamous wallpaper incident. Yes.
Yes, and you know, and doesn't seem to know who first paid for it. I mean, God or me, he's said to be not very good at money, so then God help the country. But the serious thing about all the contracts that went out for the PPE is dereliction of duty, absolutely. There's a number of investigations that he has got to worry about, one of which includes Dominic Cummings coming out with some advice to both Starmer and the Prime Minister. But the biggest one is the Electoral Commission, because that has power, independent statutory powers to interview witnesses under caution. I think that's where Cummings is coming from. Anyway, there are some very, very serious issues for parliamentary democracy in the UK, which have been need to be talked about, and I suspect the Cummings interview will blow it in, maybe by the time of your next programme.
We will wait to see. Kate, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. If you want to get involved with the show, then here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And this one in, what is the WhatsApp in? More and more people don't class themselves as working class. They are moving away from Labour, as they now consider themselves middle class and more inclined to vote Tory. The name Labour is old-fashioned. Another one in, people are voting for Bozo because they seem to believe they are harming the metropolitan elite, under, and that's in italics, and that for them is a win, even if it harms their own situation. I go back to, what would Donald Trump do? Bozo will defund Labour councils and blame the cuts they have to make on them, introduce voter ID to make the poor less able to vote, and use the press to amplify his lies, use confected culture wars to distract and wrap the whole lot in victimhood. Get Brexit done? How's that going? With several laughing emojis. Panel, Andres.
I'm curious to see that you still got the debate of the ID cards, because I had an ID card from the age of six. So I don't know what well, the problem is there. What Kate was saying, I think in all families, just a Spanish expression, by the way, we cook beans. So I mean, there's elements of corruption that are going to happen in all governments, in all parties, and everything else. And if you compare the corruption scandals that they've come out from the UK compared to the ones here, seem nothing.
Yeah, but that's
not an excuse,
surely,
of course.
Exactly, that's not good enough. And the problem with here is it is, you know, we have the ventilator contract, and we have the Dyson and JCB being looked at and contacted for these ventilator contracts, and those are not companies and were specialised in that, had any experience in that. And whilst there were ventilator companies who wanted to work, they weren't getting contacted. And the same thing goes with several of the PPE contracts that have been awarded, and it's all very well to say we were in an emergency, we had to do that, it was a pandemic. I mean, that is a blanket, and I know you're going to get shot down in flames by lots of you, but that's a blanket. Just to say we were in a pandemic, so therefore we gave it to our mates. No, it's not good enough to excuse that.
That's right. So you're absolutely correct, Giles.
Blimey.
Who cares?
Well, the electorate should care.
The electorate don't care. 1% of the electorate, like Kate, like others, they will say, I'm not voting for you because you're corrupt. That's it. You know, governments survive on the back of all of this. You're absolutely right. And we all tut-tut and we all say, you know, with Dominic Raab giving his, whatever it was he gave to his sister, and, you know, all of that nonsense. Cummings, you know, no excuse. Brother-in-law has a company, give him a contract. You know, on and on and on. And, you know, someone was right, Labour is an old name. Well, yeah, it's an old name, but it denotes something of, well, we tried. In 1995, when Blair came in, or 96, when Blair came in to be the leader,
right,
there was this whole profile change. Before that, Kinnock had tried to change. We got rid of the flag and we brought in the rose. You know, you try to rebadge your party to make it more modern, but if you rename your party, you become a new party, and people start saying, well, what do you stand for? Well, we actually stand for everything that we stood for in Labour. And if you remember how Blair changed it, we went from Labour to New Labour. You know, there's always that rebranding to try to make ourselves more modern. And sorry to Kate, the only reason we talked for a long time is because there were no phone lines, so we were a bit stifled then. But and you can't say, Kate, you know, sometimes I know you write on loads and loads of stuff, but you cannot, you know, do not mistreat the government for all of their ills. The cladding issue for Grenfell Tower isn't a cladding issue for Grenfell. It's for all of the cladding that was like the cladding and other fire damaging cladding that's used up and down the country. And they always said, because they are owned by a different group of people, anything under four stories, they would have to fund it themselves. What they weren't given was the right to say we're not going to pay to have it reclad. So all of these tenants, whatever sort of tenants they're called, have all got the issue about the cladding. It's only the four-storey jobs. But I still come back to it. As bad as that is, as bad as the PPE was, as bad as the ventilators issue, as bad as, you name it, what they've done, we've still had local elections and the Tories have wiped the floor with everybody, other than in Scotland. And the SNP haven't come out of it head and shoulders. You know, they won a few, you know, more seats, but they're still short of an overall majority. They still can't demand. You know, and I understand that they actually got more than 50% of the electorate to vote for SNP, although they didn't win all the seats for that because of some of its first past the post. So, you know, it's so frustrating. But unfortunately, Giles, it's called the finical electorate. And if they don't want to vote for an alternative, they won't vote for an alternative. No different than in Spain, you know, in Madrid.
We go live to the lines again. 952-78-4000. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE.
Quickly, Kate. Point taken about the length, etc. The other thing is very important. I just came across on the bar. One of the voters, new voters for Conservatism in Hartlepool, was talking about how she hadn't voted for the Labour candidate because he was a known paedophile. What? Said the party worker. Where did you get that from? Oh, she said it's all on Facebook. And that takes me back to some of the rigged stuff that was going on in the referendum. It would be interesting if someone could look on Facebook and see precisely what was on in the 2 or 3 days up to the general, up to the local election.
But again, Kate, it doesn't matter, you know, whether it was on Facebook, whether it was on any other social media thing. It could have been on the television, and people still go to the polls and they vote whichever way they want. But it's also about, do you believe everything that you see? I don't have social networking.
Take a point, mate. But the point is, the responsible authorities should be checking some of those things.
Yeah, but what can they do? If it's Facebook have already said, we've got footballers who can be abused, you know, racially abused or sexually abused,
okay,
or whatever. And they do nothing. So what are they going to do to this? Okay. To these people who are saying, he's a pedo?
Can I flag it up that the democracy needs defending with a bit more thought than just...
No, social media needs controlling by the governments of the world.
Yeah, OK, leave it, cheers.
Thanks very much for your call in 952-78-4000. Studio at tre.radio is the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Professional. You can WhatsApp me on +34645-996795. Andres.
It is incredible how social media are now influencing the elections. I mean, we've seen it in the United States, we've seen it in Catalonia, we've seen it in the UK, everywhere. Kate is right, there should be an element of control because the democracy is suffering because of this. You know, it's very easy to spread lies and to spread rumours and everything else, and we should be looking at voting for either results or programmes that we like, and not just simple slogans that they go out.
That's why the Russians use social media to influence, and it's not their own elections, they've manipulated them enough, but it's how they influence elections around the world. They're good at attacking social networks and spreading lies. But, you know, at the end of the road is people believe them.
But the thing is, you say that we shouldn't be just voting for simple slogans, but it's what attracts people, you know, freedom, freedom, freedom. Get Brexit done, you know. I mean,
I didn't say that.
I know you didn't say that.
No, but it's a simple message that is easily absorbed, and then you go with it, you know, like the simple message of the Conservative Party saying, we got Brexit done, we've got the vaccination programme, the lockdown was hard but we've done it well because it's been well thought out with all these amber, all these colours and all these things. It's very easy to sell to an audience.
97 general election, the biggest change in election in the UK, there were five messages, that's it. We didn't have a manifesto like when Michael Foot was in. You could use it as a bookend, you know, the longest suicide note in history. It was 5 points, and you just keep, like you say, you make it simple, you just bang the same points.
I mean, if you look at the Catalans, for instance, all the manifesto is, we want independence.
Yep.
But there's no detail to it. Yep. There's nothing, there is no...
And they don't need to put any detail, do they?
So in every election all around the world, simplicity, just a simple message that goes down well with the electorate is what is put...
Corbyn did the same as Michael Foot with the manifesto, and you get the same reaction. There aren't many people in the UK who don't agree with the renationalisation of rail. Not many, not even Tories.
Right.
Because it's a mess. But if you start putting that into a manifesto, the first question that comes up is, how are you going to pay for that? And the second question is, oh, how are we going to cope with more taxes so that you can pay for rail network privatisation, sorry. It's just, the two are not compatible all the time. So everything you put in to a manifesto is questioned, every single thing. So when that manifesto says, is manifesto at a glance, the Tory one, I can look at 20,000 extra police. Not true at the moment. They've only had 2 years. Free. Oh, but it's been a pandemic. Exactly what you said, Joe. Oh, it's because we've had a pandemic.
Remember Theresa May promising 300,000 new houses being built to solve the problem.
Absolutely.
I mean, at the time, I said that's not going to happen. And
they've never built 300,000 houses in the whole time they've been in power.
What main political parties have seen that the populist parties that they come to right and left, they have used these populist ideas of simplicity of messages, and they have adapted them themselves because they've seen how successful they've been. And how much growth these parties have had, and they said, "Well, if that's the way to attract the electorate, let's play the same game." And this was happening. But as Kate said, suffering here is democracy and real politics and real policies. That at the end of the day, what is what people want to vote for is things that will improve their life, the job prospects, their economies, and the education of their kids, and so on. So, but that is just, that's not important anymore. You need to find a nice, simple message that will attract the electorate.
There's this in from Richard saying, this reminds me of a film called Idiocracy, a 2006 film about a dystopian future, which is now a 2020 documentary about the present. Why are we in a race to the bottom from that one? And just another one, and I'll keep this to the lady who cannot afford her husband's funeral, she could consider leaving his body to the London Anatomy Office. They participate in educating future doctors and furthering medical knowledge. Yeah. Stay safe.
I've visited that.
Have you?
Yeah, I've been to their museum. It's fantastic.
All right then, okay, well, thanks for that. All right then.
No, but their bodies, they're not alive bodies, they're not dead bodies rotting. They're models of bodies coming from those, and that's how they taught medicine in the late 1800s to people. So, you know, visit it if you get the chance. You know, it's not an open museum.
I will be donating my brain to this body after this viewpoint, I think. Well, I think it would have shrunk in size considerably.
You won't enjoy what's in all the glass jars on the shelves.
Well, that's me generally these days. But anyway, right then,
Thank you very much.
They're moving swiftly onwards. Blimey. It's just before lunchtime, Alf, please. We are almost out of time. It has been my pleasure and my privilege to bring you this week's viewpoint. Good to be back in the studio. Apologies for the technical issues that we had. Hopefully we'll be back with the phone lines working. My thanks to my guest, Andre Gallardo.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Thank you very much, Alf, because although we are at opposite ends of the scale in ideas and politics, we respect each other very much so.
And of course, Alf himself.
Absolutely, I concur with that. Andreas is a good guy. I actually listen to everything he says on Spanish politics because he makes sense. Don't agree with any of it.
This show will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next.
Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.